Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
He's a former All-Pro tackle and Super Bowl champion.
The Chiefs Kingdom has firmly planted its flag on top of football's highest summit.
But now that he's retired, he's a man of leisure and still has yet to invite C-Dot and Rob over to his house.
A Sunday and a bunch of football on, a bunch of games going over there. Watch the games, kind of one larger hangout area.
It's 3 o'clock on Tuesday. Here's Mitchell Schwartz.
We're very happy to be joined right now by All-Pro right tackle Mitchell Schwartz. Our NFL playoff coverage is brought to you by Twin Peaks, where you can eat, drink, and see the scenic views. Mitch, I want to play Andy Reid from yesterday. Andy Reid talking about Patrick Mahomes and the injury. Rob, you can put it to the top of the folder yesterday, what Andy Reid had to say, because you were on the team when Patrick Mahomes had a high ankle sprain. You guys had to scheme around it. You guys had to deal with it. I'm really curious how you guys sort of managed it and what things you started to realize that Pat could do and not do when it came to his ankle. Here's Andy Reid yesterday when he met with the media.
Yeah, I think this one isn't quite as bad as that one, Sam. You know, so, but I mean, there's somewhere there. Yeah, sore, but not quite the same.
So take us through 2019, as much as you remember about it, and how was the game planning different for Mahomes without this injury as opposed to what it was like with him dealing with the injury?
You know, the interesting thing is I don't remember the actual game plan being that much different, because there's been some clips floating around from that game. Like, we're throwing 40, 50-yard bombs. We're still running play action. We're still doing everything kind of normal. And for anyone that's sprained an ankle, you know the first few days are the most difficult. And what one of the biggest things I feel like in kind of the athletic training world, and obviously Rick and his staff do a great job, I feel like one of the things that we migrated to as athletes is kind of doing more during the week. And it's not just like, oh, I'll rest up and I'll be ready by Sunday. You are pushing kind of the joint, whether it's an ankle, a knee, a shoulder, whatever it is. You're being more active. You're kind of recovering through mobility. You know, we have the pools there, and you're getting in there and taking some of the body weight off and trying to get your walking in, get a little bit of running in, and see how it responds. So you're, in general, like, more active throughout that week than you, I think, maybe used to be, where it was just like, all right, well, we'll sit you out a couple of days, and then you'll tape it up, and you'll be good to go. Like, now, again, you're pushing it. You're working it. You're working, you know, strength, mobility, range of motion. And so that week of practice, I mean, I'm fairly certain he practiced most of the week, if not all the week. I can't remember specifically what designation he had, but, you know, it's worse on Wednesday. It starts to get better towards the end of the week because, you know, again, you would think of, oh, well, if you do too much Wednesday or Thursday, it's going to swell up on you. It's going to regress. And it's like, no, if you do the right amount of work, and obviously they're not going to push him past, you know, the limit of the right amount of work. But if you do the right amount of work, it's going to respond. It's going to get stronger. Like, you're going to drive the inflammation out. You're going to strengthen the area a little bit. So he was definitely a little bit, I mean, you know, hobbling around. And as you would imagine, having an ankle sprain and trying to practice 3 days later, I guess this game he's got 4 days until tomorrow's practice. So I would imagine that things don't change too much. Again, because that Raiders game, like, we still put up a bunch of points. We still ran a pretty vertical offense. Like, I think if you were to conceptually think, what do you do with a quarterback who's a little bit injured and maybe can't move as well, you would say, all right, well, you limit his pocket mobility, so you don't move the pocket, you don't really run the play actions, you don't run as much kind of under center stretch game where he's got to, you know, run further to hand the ball off, go to a more quick passing game and try to get the ball out of his hands so he doesn't have to evade the rush, he doesn't have to sit there too long. And again, we didn't do any of that back then. We just kind of ran our offense and trusted that, you know, Pat was able enough to do it, and obviously he's tough enough that he's willing to do it. So I don't think the offense is going to change too much. I think the biggest thing is what Cincy does on defense, and if they try to force the issue, especially early, to see, you know, kind of what his limits are in terms of the mobility and how able he is to, one, evade the rush, escape the pocket, and two, kind of plant and be able to drive and force the ball down the field.
Is this an injury that you've dealt with before? Because there's certain injuries that seem kind of common amongst NFL players. Turf toe seems like an injury that a lot of players have over the course of their career, a low or a high ankle sprain. Is this an injury that you've dealt with before? And what is the training staff doing here over the next 5 to 6 days to get him ready to play for the AFC Championship game?
Yeah, I've had a few sprained ankles, had a few torn MCLs. It's all kind of my left one, because as a right tackle, you tend to get fallen into from the left side, everything kind of falling into you. You know, if you're going the opposite direction, you're on the backside, there's less people to fall into you. So I've had that injury, and the one thing I don't know from the quarterback's perspective is which ankle you'd rather sprain. You know, I think in 2019 it was the left ankle, this time it's the right ankle. For me, I was lucky it was always the left one, because that's the one that's a little bit more stable. You know, you think of me pass blocking and kind of pushing back and all that weight landing on my right ankle. Not only is it a lot of weight landing on the right side, but that ankle tends to be in weirder positions at different angles, things that would have made my life a lot more difficult. Where for me, whenever I had kind of a left side, left knee, left ankle injury, it's just more stable. You're kind of that foot is always underneath you, and you always have a little bit of ability to kind of fight through it in a way I, again, probably would not have if it was the right side. So I don't know which is better for the quarterback. You know, is it better to be able to land comfortably on a healthy ankle and throw the ball, or is it better to be able to, you know, fully drive off the back leg but then not be able to land and complete the throwing motion without pain? I don't know that one, but to your question of what does the week look like, I mean, like I said, you are probably more active than people would think. You know, it's not just go in there, lay on a table, you know, have people rub your ankle and hope the swelling goes down. Like, that is part of it. You know, obviously you try to get the swelling out, but you're getting in the pool, you're doing some walking stuff, you're doing a lot of strengthening mobility, a lot of banded work where, you know, you wrap a band around your foot and kind of do ankle pumps where you, you know, move the foot up and down. And again, try to, that mobility acts as kind of the best way to make the area heal, because blood flow is basically the key to a lot of recovery stuff. And so if you just sit there and lay there and you're not very active, you're not getting that good blood flow to the area. You're not flushing the system, and especially the ankle. And so being able to, you know, work that area again to promote the blood flow, to get all the bad stuff out of there, to, you know, get good stuff in there, but also to get as much range of motion as you can, because range of motion then inhibits, you know, kind of the strengthening of the areas, and you're forcing different areas to take over that, you know, maybe aren't used to, and then you could be at more risk to injury that way. And then also there's a bit of strengthening as well.
You guys as football players kind of mention, you know, so-and-so is the toughest guy on the team. Like, you guys know the players that are willing to play through things and the ones that aren't willing to play through things. What kind of boost does it give a team to see your quarterback try to stay in the game with that injury, pretty upset that they were taking him out? Like, you can read his mouth on the sideline. He was very unhappy that, A, they took him out, that he had to go into the locker room. Like, what does it do for a team to see your quarterback like that and wanting to be out there, and even though he's not 95%, 90%, that he's willing to play through it?
It's pretty cool, and I think it's, you know, it's probably a little less about the pushing back on trying to stay in the game. It's more just everyone gets injured at some point, and so you understand what it's like to have a sprained ankle or to have a high ankle sprain or whatever, you know, it technically is, and try to keep playing football. And so it's more just those kind of acts where you're like, man, I've kind of been through that before, and it's crazy that he's still out there. You know, I was tweeting throughout, I still can't believe he didn't break anything. The way Key fell on him, the way it all kind of looked, his reaction right after, you know, usually with those ankle sprains, at least in my experience, and, you know, maybe haven't had one quite as bad, but it's really bad for the first couple plays, and then, you know, you kind of get more used to it and stuff. But it didn't seem like his was getting any better. You know, his mobility, his movement, it almost seemed to almost get a little bit worse on him. So I'm thinking, like, that, like, kind of boost of adrenaline that you would get trying to fight through the injury, like, that doesn't seem to be working. It seems like, you know, it's not subsiding at all. And so that's why my mind went to more of the broken bone theory. I'm very, very, very happy to be wrong on that. It's nice. There's nothing broken or torn by all appearances. And, yeah, it's just the toughness thing of knowing that that guy is going to keep fighting and, you know, how competitive he is, how hard he, you know, tries to stay out there. You know, for quarterbacks, especially in this day and age, you don't get to see it that much. Like, they take shots, they take hits every now and again, but they don't get walloped like they used to. They don't, you know, you're not prying them off the ground as much as you used to. So there aren't as many indicators of this guy's willing to do X for me, or this guy's willing to fight through, you know, whatever for me. But that's a big one. And, you know, we already knew that about Pat, but it's just another good example for people out there.
Coming up on the other side, I want to talk to you about Cincinnati's offensive line, because every week we talk about how many injuries they have, but they just seem to manage it and fight through it. I want to get your opinion on what they do on their offensive line and how the Chiefs' defensive line can win that matchup. To me, that's the key to the game. If the Chiefs can get pressure on Burrow, I think it's a game that they can win. Right now, we're joined in studio by Mitchell Schwartz. Keep it right here on 610 Sports Radio.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Catch former All-Pro tackle Mitchell Schwartz Tuesday starting at 3 o'clock on your official broadcast partner of the Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is former Chiefs All-Pro tackle Mitchell Schwartz, and the best Chiefs content in town is right here with Carrington Harrison on The Drive.
Our guy Mitchell Schwartz is here in studio. Always great to catch up with him. Mitch, how did the Bengals keep doing this with their offensive line? They have three new offensive line starters since week 15. New left tackle, new right tackle, new right guard. And none of that seemed to matter on Sunday against the Bills. They have done a great job of protecting Burrow against the Kansas City Chiefs. How do they do this? What are they doing on their offensive line?
So I think specifically the last 2 weeks, from what I've seen, the Baltimore game, I thought the O-line played awful. Baltimore, for whatever reason, didn't press the receivers. I mean, you could say the reason is Chase and Higgins and those guys are really good and you don't necessarily want to play press coverage. But I think almost similar to what we saw teams do against Miami, where if you can get in, you know, Tyreek and Waddle's face for a little bit and you delay the timing just a little bit on Tua being able to get the ball out quickly in those, you know, timing-based routes, that allows, you know, either the rush to get home or something like that. And so what I thought Baltimore did a poor job of was disrupting the receivers. So they were getting to Burrow. Burrow was just getting rid of the ball so quickly. You know, I thought the right tackle, the left tackle, the right guard even a little bit, they didn't play that great of a game. It's just Burrow was getting rid of it so quick and not in the traditional sense of, like, you know, called and scripted quick game where you're just throwing little slants, you're just throwing 5-yard outs. Like, still able to throw the intermediate game and drive the ball down the field a little bit because the receivers weren't being pressed. Nothing was stopping their timing and their ability to get off the line of scrimmage. Last week, the O-line just played well. And, you know, part of that is they all knew where they were starting that week. You know, the previous week, Jonah Williams had gotten hurt. And so now you've got a left guard who, or left tackle who didn't necessarily know he was going to play left tackle in the game. And that's a little more difficult than having the full week to prepare and to know that you're the left tackle. But there's an element of, I think Buffalo's D-line wasn't very good. And, you know, their defense shifted in a huge way once Vaughn got hurt. And now they had, you know, some pieces that were having good years. I mean, Phillips in the middle was having a good year for D tackle. Rousseau was having a, you know, decent year for D end. But I think in general, their pressure rate from four-man rush went from like number one with Vaughn to in the low 20s or something without him. So they weren't necessarily dynamic rushers as a four-man unit. And that's what we saw. You know, we saw that they didn't really rush that well last week. And, you know, since his O-line played a little bit better. But I do think schematically, Cincy has really found themselves, you know, early in the season, the first 4 or 5 weeks especially. I mean, they lost to the Cooper Rush Cowboys that first week. The Cooper was starting, I believe it was week 2 of the season. We were all like, what's wrong with Cincy? You know, they were supposed to upgrade the O-line. And so there's a combination of a couple of things. Number one, Burrow changed his game. You know, I think whether he was overconfident because he got better offensive linemen or because he just generally liked keeping plays alive and looking for guys, you know, he was okay taking hits. And so he was holding on to the ball for far too long, where even if you get better linemen, you know, they can't hold up for 4 seconds. You still got to assume that, you know, it's a normal 2.5-3 second pocket. So he changed. They changed offensively as a shotgun team. They started running the ball a lot more. And you look at all the run numbers, the efficiency, you know, traditional and advanced metrics, like they're a top 5 run team because they get into shotgun. And early in the season, they were 80-90% throw and teams were playing too high and they were trying to take away Jamar and all the weapons. And now Cincinnati can be really effective and efficient running the football because they're, and obviously all the Chiefs fans know this is what we've talked about for 2 years. If teams are playing us too high, why aren't we running more? Why aren't we running more effectively? Cincinnati's doing that, and they're doing a really good job of it. And then they're also getting under center, and where they were very predictably running and doing play action, they're able to be a bit more multiple there as well. So they've taken away some tendencies. They've started giving what defenses are taking them, and Burrow has changed his style to be a lot more accommodating for an O-line, whether it's, you know, the fully healthy unit or this one now down 3 starters.
What was really impressive to me in the game on Sunday between Buffalo and Cincinnati was just how much more physical Cincinnati looked to me than Buffalo. You know, I think sometimes we throw those things out as cliches, but I thought this was like noticeable. I thought that Cincinnati kind of took the fight to Buffalo and came out there with the mentality of, you guys weren't stopping us the first time. We don't think you can stop us this time. We're just going to punch you in the mouth right here in front of everybody. I thought they did that for 60 minutes. And really dominate him. To me, at least from the Chiefs' perspective, this game is simple. You have to protect Pat, and you have to protect the ball. You have to do those two things. I don't think they've done a great job of that against Cincinnati. I also think there's always been that one turnover, that one thing that happens that kind of tilts the game in Cincinnati's favor. If the Chiefs can do those two things, I think they can win this football game. They just haven't done that in the 3 matchups against the Bengals.
You know, it's funny you say that because I forget what specifically it was. I think it was maybe an offensive line thing, but we would fill out the sheet every week of kind of our, you know, opponent game plan and some scouting stuff, and we'd give our, you know, 3 keys to the game. And my keys were basically always like, number 1, protect the quarterback. Number 2, don't turn the ball over. And number 3, run efficiently. And that's basically what you just said, like protect the quarterback, don't turn the ball over. That's really all football is about. You know, Coach Reed doesn't necessarily talk about it a ton, like exterior. But you go back to Philly, the Chiefs, he builds his teams offensive line, defensive line. Obviously quarterback's a big part of that. And we know that, you know, they value that position, but the rest of it, there's so much resource put into offensive line, defensive line, because he knows when you get to this part of the year, and it's not that the temperatures are dropping. It's not that like there's snow and you need to be physical. It's that you're going up against the best teams and you need to protect your quarterback and you need to get after the other quarterback. Because getting after the other quarterback causes turnovers. Like, those are the 2 tenets of winning football in the postseason. You go and you look at basically all the O-line, D-line matchups, and the teams that win those matchups usually win the game, which, to your point, we saw this past week with Cincinnati and with Buffalo. So, again, this is a part of our team that we've put a lot of capital into. You know, trade for Orlando, franchise tag, Tooney, highest-paid guard in football, second-rounder, sixth-rounder, Wiley, Chris Jones, one of the highest-paid guys, first-rounder in Karloftis, bunch of money to Frank, pay some for Dunlap. You know, we've got some other guys. I think Colin was a third rounder, maybe second rounder. You know, we've invested both draft and free agency and extensions in these spots for this reason, for this time of year. So it will come down to that. It will come down to how well we can, you know, protect Pat and give him time in the pocket, especially with, you know, theoretically limited mobility. And if we're able to get after Burrow and, you know, kind of force Cincinnati to do things offensively that they don't want to.
Coming up on the other side, I want to play for you. We had Dr. David Chow on the show yesterday, and he said what he's most worried about regarding Patrick Mahomes and the ankle heading into this matchup. I want to play it for you and kind of get your opinion. You've played with Pat. You know his strengths. You know his weaknesses. What are you worried about in terms of mobility and athleticism regarding the ankle in Sunday's AFC Championship game? We're joined in studio by Mitchell Schwartz. Our NFL playoff coverage is brought to you by Twin Peaks, where you can eat, drink, and see the scenic views. More talk on the AFC Championship game coming up. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Patrick Mahomes joins the show Mondays at 2:15 and 5:15. Right here on your official broadcast partner of the Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Download the Odyssey app and listen to The Drive with Carrington wherever you are.
Problematic Productions. We got Mitchell Schwartz in studio here. Mitch, really quickly, I want to play for you Dr. David Chow at Pro Football Doc. We talked to him about Mahomes' mobility and where he could potentially be. We asked him, you know, theoretically, what percentage does he think that Patrick Mahomes would be? Here's what he said.
In terms of true mobility, less than 50%. In terms of overall effectiveness, we have him rated right now physically at 84 because of all the things he can do, still sliding in the pocket and changing his arm angle and be effective. The question will be, obviously, he's not going to be able to really run. And can he drive the ball downfield stepping off that right leg? It's very hard to tape a high ankle. And there's more external rotation or high ankle sprain force on the back foot than the front foot, as in 2019. And of course, you know, your accuracy has to come into question a little bit, even if you're superhuman like Patrick Mahomes. So he's going to play. Have confidence he's going to play well. And who would you rather have out there, right? Nobody else but him.
What I'm concerned about in this game is I think Mahomes is one of the best on third down of using his mobility to help you get a first down. Whether it's third and eight, I'm going to run for 11 yards and we're going to extend the possession that way, or I'm going to buy a little bit of time because of my creativity and then I'm going to throw it 30 yards down the field and make a big play. Like, he might not be a scrambling type, but he certainly is a mobile quarterback. What does it look like if you were turning Patrick Mahomes into a primarily pocket passer, none of the extra, none of the flair that makes him one of the best quarterbacks we've ever seen? That's my fear when it comes to the ankle in this matchup is just, sure, he's going to be one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. I think to win this game, you're going to need him to be the best quarterback in the league to beat that defense.
Right, and that's the heart of the question because, you know, you can imagine, I think it was the game last year in the playoffs, with Pat running, you know, 50 yards one way, 50 yards the other, Trey Hendrickson, like, gasping for air and needing to come out for a bit. Of course, none of that mattered. They still beat us anyway. But that was a big part of, you know, what we needed to do on offense to continue drives and to keep pushing the ball down the field. And now, you know, theoretically, he's not going to have that. Does he have the ability to kind of do what he did last week and make little micro movements in the pocket and get rid of it? Yeah, I'm sure he does, and I'm sure he'll be able to do that. But in terms of, you know, again, truly breaking the pocket, and then being able to sustain that, because it's not just breaking the pocket. I mean, you can imagine, again, the right tackle gets his guy up the field, you know, Trey's being firm in there at right guard, and there's this natural seam. We've all seen Pat escape to his right many a times, and now is he actually going to pull away from the defensive tackle that Trey's blocking and that Trey has to let go so he doesn't hold? You know, can he pull away and keep the drive alive? Can he run away from the DN from the backside who's going to start chasing? You know, those are all things that I don't think we know. I don't know if, you know, even he knows until Sunday happens. I do think it's funny that he, Dr. Chow put a specifically an 84%. I mean, the percentage is always a funny thing of, you know, what percentage do you feel? And, you know, we've got someone who's now saying he's specifically going to be 84% effective. I got a little chuckle out of that.
I thought just watching it, I thought it was kind of clear what Mahomes could do and what he couldn't do. Like when they tried to do those stretch run plays, you could tell that Pat didn't feel very comfortable with those plays. I thought on some of the screen plays, trying to throw it to the outside where it took different foot movement, I thought he didn't look incredibly comfortable. But when the play was kind of in front of him and he was like moving forward, I thought he looked as close to normal as he was going to be. The ball sailed high a couple of times, but when the play was right there in front of him, I thought he did a really good job. It was when you asked him to do things kind of outside of that is where I thought I struggled. And that's why I'll be curious to see with Andy. All right, over these next couple of days, it's about finding your physical limitations and coming up with an offense that we think Betts highlights what you can do on the field.
Well, it's not just coach doing that. It's Pat figuring out how to make those throws. Like, you know, you think of Steph Curry. He's, you know, the best three-point shooter of all time. Why is he that way? Because no matter what he's doing, what the defender's doing, he's always got that awareness to know, like, all right, my legs are a little tired. I didn't jump quite as high. I don't have the same power. Like, I got to get this one just a little bit more power to get it in. Or, oh, I'm drifting off to my right as I'm catching and shooting. And, like, those recalibrations as they're happening, you know, Pat basically had to do that on the fly during the game. He didn't have a chance to, like, do the RPO where he fakes the handoff and slings one to the right, which we saw a bad pass this past week. Like, that was the first time he ever tried that with a sprained right ankle. He's got this whole week of practice to figure out what he is able to do, but not just what he's able to do, what he needs to do physically to basically make those throws and to overcome the lack of stability or lack of strength or whatever you want to say in terms of what the ankle is going to present. So it's more like him finding out the calculations of how much extra he needs to add, because he's always doing those things anyway. Like, that's the touch and the feel and the velocity. And when you talk about quarterbacks that only throw a fastball, you know, they don't have that ability to kind of throttle down different speeds and different trajectories. You know, Pat's always been exceptional at that, and he's always got a good ability. I mean, we saw it early in the game, the jump pass stuff in the pocket and knowing, like, just how much extra oomph to put on balls and how far in front of guys he can throw. So that's going to be the big thing for him this week, is figuring out, you know, if I do have that, you know, fake handoff to the left and I got to sling it out to the right, and normally, you know, as you're doing that, you're starting to go back to the right. You're putting a lot of weight on the right leg. If the stability is not there, he's used to throwing that kind of sidearm thing. You know, does that have to change? Does he have to, you know, throw it a little higher to account for it to get there? Those are going to be the interesting things this week in practice.
So when I was watching football this weekend, a couple of things that you said over the course of our conversations kept kind of standing out to me. Number one, you've mentioned this. I think people got to start looking at football games like basketball games. Like in basketball games, teams go on a run. You know, it's a 6-0 run, 8-0 run, and nobody really bashes an eye because you know that your team's going to go on a run. We see the exact same thing happen in football now with how quick these offenses can score and how one penalty can turn things. You're really one score and one stop away from being right back in almost every football game that you watch. I also was thinking about the defense here, and I think sometimes social media, they get so, oh, the Chiefs give up. Hold on, teams are going to score here. I thought they did. I thought there were really two things wrong with the Chiefs defense, like over the course of the game. The George Karloftis on Christian Kirk, that they got you. Like, they moved it, they positioned it. I don't know why your rookie defensive end is covering Christian Kirk out of the backfield. It went as I expected, and it was one drive where I thought that Jacksonville went down the field pretty easy. Outside of that, I mean, they held Trevor Lawrence to 5.5 yards per attempt. I mean, Jacksonville ran it fine, but they didn't really have a couple of runs that really hurt you for the most part. I thought this was as good as you can expect the Chiefs defense to play.
Right, and they didn't even have one good drive. They had a really long kickoff return, and then they went, 39 yards for a touchdown? So it's not like they really drove the field on the Chiefs, and, you know, the defense was really, like, had a bad 12-play drive. They had, like, five bad plays, and really awful field position. And, yeah, I mean, I tweeted about the Karlaftis thing. Obviously, anytime the defense does something bad and anytime a defensive ends in coverage, it's fire Spags and what is Spags doing, and that is a pretty boring and, you know, overused thing in Chiefs Kingdom, and I get it. The interesting part of that play specifically is that basically at the snap, Willie and Karlaftis are talking to each other. And so, like you said, I mean, I think Doug just got him. Like, whether he had an inkling that blitz was going to come, I don't know. But obviously putting Kirk in the running back spot, you know, I don't know what Spags is telling those guys. I don't know if Spags is saying, like, hey, if that's the case, you know, we can't have our DN one-on-one with a wide receiver. Let's just abort that side of the blitz. Willie, instead of you blitzing, like, just let George come, and you're just going to be in man coverage on the wide receiver because we need a little bit more speed there. You know, that's a pretty simple fix, like, whether it's just bad planning or bad coaching or whether it's, you know, better offensive scheme and structure. Like, I can't answer that. But, again, the defense played really well, and we had a ton of other blitzes throughout the game that everybody loved. The first drive was, like, three blitzes in a row, and Jags go three and out. No one's saying fire Spags because he's blitzing too much then. Like, it's we're just so reactionary to pick the one bad player, the one thing that we don't like, and it worked. Like, the defense played really well, and the scheme was really good. This specific week is really interesting because last year it was we play too much man coverage and we can't let Jamar be one-on-one with our corners and, you know, we need to play some more zone and keep them in front of us. Well, what did we do this year? We played more zone and we kept them in front of us and it didn't do anything and it didn't work. So now we're going to go into the game. I don't know if he's going to lean more man heavy. I don't know if he's going to lean more zone heavy. But whatever happens, people are going to say fire Spags after we give up a touchdown to Jamar Chase. Like, he's doing everything. Like, last year you guys didn't like it that he played man coverage. This year you didn't like it that he played zone. What else do you want him to do? Because there's not many other ways to play defense. I think that's going to be, honestly, the two defenses are going to be the most interesting part of this game to me. It's going to be how does Cincy attack the Chiefs with Pat's mobility and whether they try to force some sort of inkling of what can he do early in the game. And then maybe they've got a defensive game plan that's, all right, this guy's limited, we're going to go with this one. And the other defensive game plan is, you know, if he looks normal, we're going to go back to the normal thing that usually works. And then for Spags and for the Chiefs, how are you going to attack Cincinnati's pass game? Are you going to play a little bit softer? Are you going to play more zone, keep things in front of you, allow them to kind of dink and dunk their way down the field, allow the run game to take over? Or are you going to challenge them in press coverage, a few more blitzes, and, you know, trying to get home in that way?
Coming up on the other side, I want to get your thoughts on the rivalry that's brewing between these two teams. We have certainly heard a lot of comments from the Cincinnati Bengals side. I'm just curious what you think they mean, if anything. We're joined in studio right now by Mitchell Schwartz. Keep it right here on 610 Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Drive. Catch insider Nate Taylor with Cody and Gold every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on your official broadcast partner of the Chiefs, 610 Sports Radio.
This is former Chiefs All-Pro tackle Mitchell Schwartz, and the best Chiefs content in town is right here with Carrington Harrison on The Drive.
Right now, we're joined in studio by Mitchell Schwartz. Mitch, I'm just going to play a couple of cuts for you here really quickly. So, you know how NFL film shows, you know, you guys on the sideline and you're talking and doing all of that. The Cincinnati Bengals wanted to give a message to the rest of the league.
We'll see y'all in Burrowhead.
Yeah, baby.
Let that sink in your mind. We'll see y'all in Burrowhead.
So with one win at Arrowhead, it is now officially called Burrowhead. That is what the Bengals players are calling it. I have never seen a team complain more about two things that didn't happen. The Bengals have been complaining about this coin toss that never happened, and they are also upset about the neutral site game and them selling tickets for it, even though they themselves were selling tickets for an AFC championship game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Here is Zach Taylor.
For the neutral site, I mean, yeah, we had our mindset to go play in Kansas City, and it is tough because they have to formulate the plans for coin tosses, and they got to formulate the plans for neutral site games, and we just keep screwing it up for everybody, and I hate that for people that have to endure all those logistical issues And then we just keep screwing it up. So I'm sorry.
What do you make of all this back and forth with the Cincinnati Bengals? It's gotten really loud the last 3 weeks.
It has, and Chiefs Kingdom is a little sore from the past three matchups. And, you know, I know some people feel like we were the better team and we should have won, but the record's pretty clear. They've been better over the last three matchups. And I think there's still the element that, like, they haven't won at all, so they shouldn't be talking this much. And, you know, it's a lot of talk for just getting to a conference championship game when you're not even the home team. And but the flip side is, like, we would love this if this was our team. You know, we'd be so happy that we had these dudes who didn't care about what the media said, what the reaction was. They were super confident in themselves. So I feel like there's a little bit of hypocrisy for the people that are so upset with, you know, what Cincinnati's doing talking-wise, and who would absolutely love it if the Chiefs were doing something similar. So it's just a little bit of a difference in, you know, the way things run. It seems like, you know, Zach Taylor doesn't care quite as much. Obviously, Coach Reed was pretty quick to, you know, criticize Justin Reed in his own way during the last matchup when Justin talked, and that's just not the way, you know, he prefers to have things done. Some teams, some, you know, guys don't care. Taylor might care, and Eli Apple and the other guys just might not, you know, really care about that, and they might still do it anyway. But it is shaping up to be a pretty intense rivalry, and I think, you know, we talked about this last time. There's a mutual hatred between the teams now, and you can definitely tell, you can sense it, you can feel it. And so that's kind of the cool thing in the rivalry itself, is it's not just, oh, well, we respect them and, you know, they're a really good team and we play hard against each other, and because we're two good teams, we have good matchups. It's like, no, both teams hate each other now, and that brings an extra level of intensity, especially in a championship game.
I mean, you've certainly heard this as a professional athlete. I think fans kind of criticize and say, hey, it's too buddy-buddy. These guys are changing jerseys after the game, and everybody's friends. I miss the 90s where guys used to hate each other. This feels like a 1993 matchup. I'm with you. Like, the Bengals seem to hate the amount of attention that the Chiefs get. They think, hey, we won the last three matchups. We won the AFC Championship game last year. People kind of looked at us as a fluke. Look, hey, we're back here. If you're Kansas City and you're thinking to yourself, hey, Cincinnati's done all this talking. We're the only team among these group in the AFC that has a championship ring. We're still on top until somebody else proves otherwise. This is what you want a rivalry to be. Two really talented, really equally matched teams, good coaches, good quarterbacks, passionate fan bases, even talent that don't seem to like each other. This is why we watch the National Football League. I like it on both sides. I don't have any problem with it.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with it. You know, not the type of thing that would have motivated me. Like, I wouldn't have cared that they'd be doing this talking, but it does motivate some guys. You know, I think that's why Coach doesn't like when our guys do it, because you don't want to give the opponent any more incentive or motivation to want to beat you from what they already do. But it seems like, you know, that's what Cincinnati does. And I always had this theory on Richard Sherman that he trash talked less for the opponent and more for himself, that he did it so that, like, he had to back up his own talk. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I feel like there's almost an element that Cincy is so confident that, like, they're okay putting that stuff out because then they're, you know, excited to prove it and to go and, you know, do what they say they're going to do. So it's a real rivalry at this point. Like, this is the rivalry again that we thought Lamar was going to be, then we thought Allen was going to be. It seems like it's Burrow, and it seems like it's the Bengals.
I want to play this audio for you really quickly. This was on Colin Cowherd's show. He's talking about the opening right now for the Denver Broncos. I want to get your thoughts on these couple things before we get you out of here. Listen to the latest report from Colin Cowherd about Sean Payton and the Broncos, Jeff.
Russell Wilson is washed amid the Sean Payton rumors. I have been told the Broncos have made a decision. They want Sean Payton. Russell Wilson has told the Broncos owners he wants Sean Payton. Here's the dilemma. According to an NFL exec, Denver's got the best tradition. The new owners seem aggressive. They're willing to spend. But I think Russell Wilson's washed, and the lack of draft capital holding him back. The defense is very good, but Mahomes and Herbert aren't going anywhere in that division.
I think it's Broncos or bust for Sean Payton. I don't think he takes any other coaching job. Like, I'd be surprised if he took the Arizona job. He took Carolina. To me, it seems like if you're him, you just go back to Fox. The people at Fox seem to love you. You make a lot of money, and you just roll the dice, and you do the same thing next year. You just get a different batch of teams to go interview for and be their head coach. I think it's Broncos or bust for Sean Payton.
I'm with you. I wonder if he waits another year, does New Orleans soften on what they're asking for in a trade as well? There's a bit of the recency of feeling like, oh man, he wanted to take this year off and now he wants to jump back in already and he wants to do it with another franchise. You know, if he takes another year off and now it's 2 years removed, maybe, you know, you're only asking for the one late first rounder or a high second and some others, and you're able to more easily offload him as well, because it's not just that he has to find a team that wants him, that he wants, and then they, you know, that whole thing and the contract, but then they have to figure out what is worth trading for. And obviously it gets easier as the draft compensation lessens. So I don't know if that is part of it a little bit too, but it just, it doesn't seem like a great job has materialized. You know, the ones that are open with the better quote unquote situations don't have good quarterback situations. So yeah, I would probably just sit this one out and I would wait, and see what happens next year. Cause you know, again, five or six guys are going to get fired next year. And you just don't know which one of those is going to be the right spot, the right opportunity. What if the Chargers implode and they actually do need to move on from Staley? Or, you know, what if one of these other jobs that you don't think is available right now seems to open up and the quarterback situation is more stable?
So I want to play for you what Adam Schefter had to say. He talked about the possibility of the Packers trading Aaron Rodgers this offseason.
Aaron Rodgers. And look, it's hard to imagine that he's going to retire and walk away and surrender $110 million in guaranteed money. So that means he's either back with Green Bay or the team explores the idea of trading him. Now, Jordan Love is getting closer and closer to playing, and Aaron Rodgers is due $110 million the next 2 years for a team that is not well positioned against the cap. The easiest way to resolve some of that would be with the quarterback. You'd free up about $60 million in guaranteed money. You get back draft pick compensation. You'd have the ability to land other players. Again, not ideal, but keep this in mind too. We saw Brett Favre traded when he was 38, turned 39 that season. Aaron Rodgers is 39. It doesn't go on for everybody. And yes, one of these scenarios that the Green Bay Packers are expected to explore this offseason is the idea that they could have to part ways with Aaron Rodgers in the form of a trade. Doesn't mean it will happen, but if he wants that and they're on the same page, then that's certainly realistic, and there's the possibility that could unfold this offseason. I don't think there's any way the Packers would trade him in the NFC, and if they do go ahead and trade him, it would be to the AFC. So start having all the fun you want with all the teams in the AFC that need quarterbacks.
It seems to me like the relationship between Aaron Rodgers and the Packers is at the end. I got that feeling on Sunday Night Football. The way that Aaron Rodgers was carrying himself, he was carrying himself like he kind of felt like this was going to be his last game now. He certainly could be milking. And if anybody was just kind of trying to soak in this little extra 15 minutes of it's all about me, it certainly would be Aaron Rodgers. He's 39 years old. He's clearly a declining player. You still have Jordan Love. You don't really have a definitive answer one way or the other on what kind of player he is. I would trade Aaron Rodgers this offseason. If you're going to do it, you got to do it this offseason. What do you think happens with the Packers quarterback?
Yeah, I think there's some major cap implications for trading him. You know, he kind of held them hostage over the last couple of years, and he forced this mega contract, and I don't think it's very easy to trade. I could be wrong on that, but from my recollection, it's not so easy. And so it gets back to now, has the power shifted? He's not coming off two MVP seasons. He's coming off missed playoffs. His receiver wanted out. You know, the team's not quite as good. Do you have the leverage to just sit on his contract and say, we're not going to trade you if you want to walk away? Like, we're going to make you repay all the bonus money that we can make you repay, and then see what he does from there. And if he really, the only thing you can do is just say, like, all right, I'm going to show up and pretend to be hurt all year. And I mean, you don't actually say that, but you know, you make it known that you're going to show up and you're just going to, like, yeah, you know, my back's not feeling good. And he can then, you know, flip the script and hold them hostage that way. But it does seem like, you know, the onus has kind of gone to Green Bay just a little bit. And so I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to happen. I just know the offseason hasn't started and we're already talking about this and I'm already tired of it.
No, I mean, that's kind of been the life of Aaron Rodgers. I'll get you out of here with this. Chiefs win if, Bengals win if on Sunday.
The Chiefs win if turnovers are kept to a minimum, like you said earlier. And I think if we can expose that offensive line just a little bit. To me, the Alex Kappa injury, the right guard for Cincy, didn't matter because you can replace guards. until they played us, because Chris lines up over right guards, and that's where he does all of his work. And so you're either getting a backup guard or you're getting Kappa not 100% healthy. And to me, that's a huge, huge mismatch. Can Burrow overcome that? Can the offense overcome that? That's to be seen. If they can't, then I don't think Cincy can win. And, you know, I think it's we've seen that the matchup kind of favors Cincy, and I said this after the last game, but, like, after three games, you can't say, oh, we shot ourselves in the foot and, oh, this. Like, no, it's Cincy's good, and they're forcing these mistakes. And so I think Cincy just needs to keep doing what they've been doing, you know, have these good defensive game plans, force Pat to, you know, kind of go through all his reads and try to frustrate him that no one's coming open, and I wanted to throw it, but now there's a guy who's sitting in the thing, and they're only rushing three, but they're also getting home. So I think Cincy just needs to keep doing what they're doing. You know, they seem to understand how to beat the Chiefs. But I, you know, do think if we play the game the right way and all those things, like, this is as evenly matched as a game that we've seen in a while, so it should be a fun one.
That is our guy, Mitchell Schwartz, joining us in studio. Our NFL playoff coverage on 610 is brought to you by Twin Peaks, where you can eat, drink, and see the scenic views. Mitch, man, always good talking football with you.
Same. It'll be a fun Sunday.
Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about one of the biggest what-ifs in Kansas City sports history. That's coming up. Keep right here. It's The Drive.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.